Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. If this is your first time listening to the Guelph Politicast, welcome to the show. Guelph Politicast is an interview program where I talk to politicians, activists, and people of note making a difference or are just making life in the Royal City more interesting. For previous episodes of the Guelph Politicast, you can find them on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or you could subscribe through iTunes. Today I talked to Laurel Bolton, Daniel Cabina, and Mary Cabina of the Neighbors of Glasgow Street North Community Action Group. They are fighting City Hall and beyond to get their say about the planned demolition of a home at 202 Glasgow Street North, and they will give you the whole story in just a minute. But first, my usual public service announcement. Recently, I launched the Patreon campaign for Guelph Politico. Through Patreon, you can contribute on a per-monthly basis of any amount you feel comfortable using PayPal or your credit card, and all that money goes to maintaining a locally sourced independent media outlet in Guelph called Guelph Politico. Through your generous donations, you will be paying to keep the Politicast going, as well as regular coverage of City Council and politics in and around and concerning the Royal City. For more details, click on the giant orange P on the right-hand side of the Guelph Politico page, or you can go to patreon.com/GuelphPolitico. Now on with the show. Imagine coming home from work one night and seeing the house next door to you being torn down. That's pretty much what the residents in the area of 202 Glasgow Street North were afraid of, and it was the lack of communication that prompted them to form the Neighbors of Glasgow Street North Community Action Group. At a November 2015 City Council meeting, the landlord of 202 Glasgow applied for and received permission from Council to tear down the house on the property and build a new one, but here's the thing. The people next door had no idea it was coming. To be clear, the members of the Action Committee are not anti-development, nor are they anti-density. They're pretty much cool with the idea of tearing down the house or leaving it up, or whatever the owners want to do. What they don't like, though, is feeling that something sneaky was going on in their neighborhood. They don't like the idea that they had no clue that the house was scheduled to be torn down. They didn't like that the landlord didn't really have an obligation to keep them informed that he was planning to tear it down. And they don't like the idea that the landlord seemed to be aiming to build a duplex or a triplex on property that's currently designated for a single-family home. So, they are taking this all the way to the Ontario Municipal Board now, and they seem to have the backing of a lot of people in Guelph who recognize, again, the free flow of information from citizens to the city and back again is key to making our communities run smoothly. So, in my conversation with Mary, Daniel, and Laura, we tell the story of their struggle, where they hope to take it next, as they are preparing for that OMB hearing, and what they hope to achieve once this process is all over. So I caught up with the three of them in downtown Guelph. All right. Thank you for joining me, the three of you today. I'm going to have you, first of all, introduce yourselves so that everyone knows who is speaking when. So I'll start on my left.
So I'm Laura Bolton.
I'm Mary Pearson Cabina.
I'm Dan Cabina.
And you all are part of, I want to get the wording right, the name of your organization, that's the Glasgow North Neighborhood Coalition?
The Neighbors of Glasgow Street North.
Yeah. Okay, good.
Community Action Group, yeah.
Okay. And this all came together because of a very specific issue on your street, 202 Glasgow Street North, which is slated for demolition and has been slated for demolition since last November. Why is this a big deal? If you want to start with the beginning of the story, to get at the beginning of the issue there.
Daniel and I live next door, and we've been resident, I've been resident, and Daniel in more recent years, but I've been resident there for over 20 years. And many of the residents in our section of Glasgow, which is between London and Suffolk, have been long-term residents on the street. Mm-hmm. And we have a pretty vibrant street. Everybody knows each other pretty well. And we're also a very mixed street with semi-detached and...
Structurally, you mean?
Yeah, structurally. The houses, we have a lot of... We are on the official plan. I guess we would be a R1B residential street, but we have non-conforming duplexes, semi-detached dwellings, multi-apartment single houses. It's, mm-hmm. it's very vibrant. We very believe in that kind of intensification and mixed use. And back in January, I think within a day or two, we all came home one day and we had a letter in the mail from the Committee of Adjustment for the City of Guelph to let us know about some variances that were being requested for the house that's next door to us, which is 202 Glasgow. Mm-hmm. And for us, as a pretty tight-knit group in the neighborhood, this was a shocking revelation that this was the first we knew of any kind of development happening at 202 Glasgow. Mm-hmm. Just a little bit of background, that the neighbor next door is a landlord and has owned that building even longer than we've been there, for possibly about 25 years, and has rented it as a duplex for that time period. And there's been different tenants are often on over the years, some problems, some not, but you know, generally just a turnover of renters next door. So, and he hasn't lived nearby for a while, so we don't see him very much. And so we always, I think, would be fair to say, Laura, we've always hoped that someone would maybe someday buy the house and
renovate it.
Yeah.
Bring it back to its glory.
Yes. So right now it is owned by a man who, it was a mansion at one point. It was built in the 1890s, and it was its own single dwelling that somebody lived there, but at some point in the last century, it's been split into two separate dwellings in the same house.
Yeah,
an upper and lower.
An upper and lower duplex. Yeah, and you know, I don't know if I'd call it a mansion, but it's big-ish. Like,
it's a beautiful old
gingerbread.
Yeah.
Victorian, yeah. Uh-huh.
And so when we did get this notice from the Committee of Adjustments, it was really a crisis to many of the people in the neighborhood, mm-hmm. because it sits in the middle of our street,
right?
And it is a beautiful old house. It seems not right that it should be demolished.
Right.
But besides that, we had no knowledge that it was slated and had been approved for demolition.
So yeah. To clarify, too, the variance they're looking for is for the building they're going to build.
Exactly.
After
the new
That's
building.
Right. Yeah. That's right. So this was our first introduction to the idea that the building was even going to be demolished,
yeah.
that it had been delisted from Heritage Guelph. All of this was news to us. No, there was no peep of any kind of information about this until we got the notice of the variance.
I did take the liberty of going back into the November 9th meeting notes, and the staff report said that there was it didn't say anything about letting the neighbors know, or which I think if you're, like, a house was up for demolition, people living next door, you guys might like to know there's going to be some bulldozers and other construction vehicles in right next door there. But it did say that there was a sign posted on the site that there was going to be a demolition, or it was up for consideration of demolition.
Well, it seems that what happened was that a sign was created by the city,
okay.
but that it was never picked up.
So by the owner.
By the owner. So,
okay.
Because in fact, that's not a statutory requirement.
Right.
It's considered to be a courtesy.
Right.
That one would post a notice of pending demolition.
I'm guessing it was probably one of those scenes you see around where it's like, you know, by law, zone review coming up at this meeting at this date. And so he never picked it up. The landlord
never picked it,
because
yeah.
he's not in town.
No, he's out of province.
Okay.
He does have an agent here representing him.
Yes.
And he certainly was made aware, to our knowledge, that there was the sign prepared and to be picked up. And when we talked to the planning department, they were quite surprised that the sign was still with them.
Right. They still have it at City Hall right now.
Yes.
Yes.
And that they were quite surprised that it had never been picked up or posted. And they then looked into why not. And as it turns out, the bylaw is such that you cannot compel the owner to post the sign. So it's considered a courtesy, not a statutory requirement.
All
and
right.
So if an owner decides, yeah, I'm just not going to do that, and keep the neighborhood in the dark, then you certainly can do that.
So if the owner gets a demolition permit,
mm-hmm.
without the knowledge of any of the neighbors, a wrecking ball can come in and mm-hmm. take that house down.
You literally could come home
in
from
a day.
Work
yeah.
and the house is gone.
Gone.
Yeah.
I assume you've maybe consulted some sort of legal expert about the onus of the city to let you guys know what's going on when it comes to demolition, so there was no onus on the city's part to say this is.
Our understanding is that their responsibility is simply to produce the sign.
Okay.
In that case, but that they're not able to compel the homeowner to post.
Yes, and in fact, part of one of the first orders of business for our community group was to talk to the city about
procedures. You know,
this procedure is not
perhaps, or the lack of a procedure.
Or the lack of procedure. Yeah. Yes. And in fact, we have talked to our city councilors, our Ward 3 councilors, about that as well, and they have agreed that this needs to be looked at. Mm-hmm. This shouldn't be. Neighborhoods should not be kept in the dark about that sort of thing, that perhaps it needs to have a little bit more clarity and regulatory strength. But even preceding that, the house was delisted from the historic register.
Right.
So many, many of the houses in downtown Guelph are non-designated, but nevertheless on the cultural heritage list. And so you can't demolish a house without first addressing that with Heritage Guelph.
I did look, they did mention that in the staff report about, they did talk to Heritage Guelph, and they, I think the basic verdict was too much in the house had been changed from its original structure to consider it heritage worthy, I guess, as well.
Yeah, and what's interesting, of course, is that the meeting that Heritage Guelph has is also a public meeting.
Right.
So, in theory, a neighborhood can go to a public meeting of Heritage Guelph to make a case or to at least have some input into that decision-making process. But, again,
there's no notification.
Right.
There is no notification, and the only way to find out if a building has been being considered for delisting is if you happen to read the minutes of Heritage Guelph's meeting coming up.
Right.
And when we talked to the city and Heritage Guelph, they said, well, yes, some people do actually check every month to see what's being discussed at Heritage Guelph, and therefore they will find out about it and then they can go to the meeting.
Right.
Obviously a bit of a needle in the haystack for most people in the city to be constantly checking every month to see if your neighbor happens to be thinking of delisting your house.
Yeah.
A bit of a problem in our view. So, again, that happened first.
Right.
And, in fact, the house had been delisted, and then the process to look at getting approval for demolition came after that. So there were sort of two major steps that happened, and we were entirely in the dark through both those processes.
And even just to go back to the delisting of the house, it was the owner's engineer that did the report, not a Heritage Guelph's engineer.
Okay.
Right? And most homes that were built in 1890 have been altered at some level, right? So basically the porch had been changed and two dormers had been put in the front of the house. So
as it goes in our street, as it happens, it's fairly original compared to many, many houses on the street. If you actually walked by, you would say, wow, that house, original windows, original doors, not painted brickwork, not sided. It's actually very, very authentic compared to a lot of the housing stuff in downtown Guelph.
Well, the staff report did note that there may be elements to be saved, which I guess it's worthy enough that there are parts to save, not worthy enough to save as a whole, which...
Yes, and when you look at the cooling inventory that lists all the houses in downtown Guelph and their historic and cultural value, 202 Glasgow is considered low cultural value,
right?
But there are many, many, many that are considered zero cultural value. So it's by far, in a way, not the bottom of the list.
Yeah.
And in fact, almost everything in downtown Guelph is low to no. There's a few, on our street, I think there's two houses that are above that in terms of their considered historic interest. So, one of the problems for us is that it's right smack dab in the middle of the street, and every single house within four or five on either side across the street are all original.
Right.
There is no demolition in this section of our street yet, and so it's a real major change to this particular section of Glasgow.
To be clear of your intents, you are not against, on principle, this being demolished, though?
No, I think
like,
no.
No, I didn't. Because this sort of leads us into the whole other area of discussion, which is the proposed new build. Which so when we received notice that from the Committee of Adjustment, they sent in their package the schematic drawings, a brief plan of what was proposed to be built there.
Mm-hmm.
And we looked at it and became very alarmed, because really what's it's you know, kind of a wolf in sheep's clothing, if you like, because it's really a triplex. You know, that's sort of, it's tailor made to be sort of really a multi residential dwelling, you know, with an exterior staircase and everything. So we were concerned by also what was being proposed as the new home.
Yeah, I think we recognized that 202 had been neglected for a long time and it was in pretty poor condition.
Right.
And, you know, owners do have the right to look at replacing a house that may require more work than it's worth investing in. And on the surface, looking at the plans of the new house, they do try to replicate the appearance on the front of the house. And we were like, oh, our initial first blush was like, oh, okay, it may not be too bad compared to some of the infill housing.
Right.
But when you looked at the actual plan of the house, that's where the real issues came. And we've said many times publicly that we believe in intensification. We believe in that kind of walkable, intensified city, multi-use neighborhoods. We're very strong in that. So we're, as much as the process leading to demolition was flawed and lacked notification to the neighborhood, we're not strictly against that.
Right.
What we do, but as Daniel said, when you look at the plans, then we have a whole other problem that's developed,
So it was sold, it's being sold to you guys as they're replacing one house with another house.
Yeah. Right.
But it seems that it's more like, I don't know, like some kind of apartment building dressed up as a house with exterior access all around. It's not like somebody who's building a house and is going to have a basement apartment that they can rent.
That's right.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, most of the houses that are built with accessory apartments in Guelph have a basement accessory apartment.
Right.
Like the vast, vast majority. And
it's the most obvious place to put it.
Yeah. And most people, well, and in fact, most people want the principal dwelling to be their principal dwelling, like a normal house, and then they have an accessory apartment. You know, in this case, you know, you're taking an R1B zoned property, which when you demolish, even though it's a non-conforming duplex right now, when you demolish, it reverts to a single family home. You cannot put up a new non-conforming duplex.
Right.
You have to go back to a single family home. Great. In fact, that was one of the reasons why we supported the idea that, oh, great, maybe get a family back on the street and another single family dwelling back on the street, because we do have a lot of apartments and duplexes and so forth. But because of the way building code and bylaw is that you can build something that apparently looks like a single family home, has no interior staircases.
Right.
Not a single one. So if you can build that, your staircase is exterior to the building but enclosed, technically, that's an interior staircase. But in fact, there is no interior access between the first and second floor. I don't know any families who are going to go outside their house
to go upstairs. So forever and a day, this new build will never be a single family home again.
Right.
Right. There's no opportunity for that ever to be a single family home again, because there's no interior staircase.
Right. Could be a trend in architecture.
and that's a really interesting comment, because part of what the Committee of Adjustments looks at is, are there other designs like that in the neighborhood?
Right.
And in fact, there are not.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an interesting point.
Right.
Because I don't think it will be a...
I don't think so either, but I would be curious to know if that could be how it would be sold.
Yes.
So... you guys get this mail about the Committee of Adjustment, your former group. What is your goal in this? Do you want to have that meeting over again, do it proper with actual public notice, or put it on hold till you've had your say? What are your immediate goals?
Well, we did have an opportunity to have a say at the Committee of Adjustments.
Yeah.
We didn't have a lot of time to prepare.
Right.
Because from the day we were notified in the mail, you have 10 days. So we sort of had to pull our group together and our thoughts together and understand sort of how the whole process works. And, you know, most of us don't have that understanding and how...
I assume there are no bylaw experts in the group. Or other word at the time.
There are a lot of professionals, but
no
planners at that time. So we did have an opportunity to have a say. Some of the group did some really great research on the bylaw, on the accessory apartment bylaw and how it's changed over the years to mm-hmm. become what it is today. Unfortunately, by the time he did the research, the deadline for submitting comments was passed. So right. he got to speak to his research, but the Committee of Adjustments didn't actually look at the work that he had done.
This was one of our neighbors who had done a lot of research okay. on the history of the accessory apartments and in previous decisions of council with regard to accessory apartments.
And I take it it's the typical 5 minutes you get to deliver. And
mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
So we did have an opportunity to have a say, and at the end of the day, the decision was a 3-2 decision. So there were two members on the committee that were in agreement with our philosophy, our thoughts.
Yeah, and then three voted for the plan. And okay. one of the striking comments at that time from one of the people on the committee was the view that a big house should be able to have a big accessory apartment, except that the bylaw is quite clear that the maximum size for an accessory apartment is 80 square meters.
80 square meters.
That's the maximum allowed, or 45% of the total square footage of right. the house. But what's interesting about this 45% square footage rule is that definition has a special application only in accessory apartment bylaw. In regular bylaw, you can only count the first and second floor, the main floor, and above grade floors are the total square footage.
Right.
And so with accessory apartments, because the vast majority are in basements, they allow you to include the finished basement as part of your total square footage.
I see.
So when you do 45% of that total square footage, that can be quite big, mm-hmm. right? But then they put the other limit, no more than 80 square meters, whichever is
lesser.
Lesser. And that was our argument. Well, 80 square meters, this was going to be
115 square meters. So basically, the first and second floor of the house are almost the same size.
Right.
So the accessory apartment is 50% bigger than the minimum, the maximum allowed by the city. And that's our issue.
Right.
And so the Committee of Adjustments was looking at a variance to a bylaw, not to take it up 5 or 10%, but 44% bigger.
Right.
And we thought that was a pretty obvious, stretch.
Yeah, we didn't feel it was minor in nature.
It was not minor in nature. But the Committee of Adjustment took the view, well, no, big house should be able to have a big accessory apartment. Right. And so they decided to go with the 45% rule and just scratch the 80 square meter. And so that's where we are now, because now we're appealing that to the OMB.
Mm-hmm. And there's been a lot of, at the last council meeting about overreaching powers of the OMB, but I mean, this does sound like something, perhaps an area that the OMB was meant to look into. It seems the power in this situation, the power rolled over the neighborhood, who were caught unprepared, were caught unawares, and the bare minimum wasn't even good enough to let you guys know what was happening.
Well, yeah, and these are the variances from statutory law.
Mm-hmm.
So if a community of a citizen feels the city is overstepping variance from bylaw, then there has to be something to protect the residents.
Right. right?
If they're sticking just to bylaw, then we're all subject to bylaw.
Mm-hmm.
But when you stretch over that and decide you're going to do variance, and then of course the Committee of Adjustment is community based, like these are people drawn from the community to sit on this committee.
Right.
Not necessarily experts, then what's the resident to do? The resident needs somebody to protect them from those kind of decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So that in this case, I think the OMB is the right way to go.
So where are you in that process right now? Are you preparing to submit the application? Have you submitted?
We have submitted the application.
Okay. Yeah. And so what's the timeline for that?
So we submitted the application on March the 2nd. We've just supplied our file coordinator planner with the dates of availability that we have over the next 4 months, and
okay.
they will notify us as to our hearing date.
Okay.
Yep.
So it'll be sometime in the next 4 months.
Yeah, so now as a community group, our job is to fundraise.
Yeah, because it's an expensive process.
Yes, it is an expensive process.
And interestingly, from the deliberations at council, it seems that expertise seems to win at these OMB hearings. So,
yes, absolutely.
Considering, no disrespect, the lack of expertise you've had before this process began, what are you doing to prepare?
Well, we have hired a planner.
Okay.
To represent us to be our expert witness at the hearing. We're told it'll be a one-day hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're meeting with him next week, some of the key members of the neighbors of Glasgow Street North, to put our plan in place, to put our strategy together for that day.
Yeah.
And this is to revisit the whole situation at the top. These plans come from a new owner who's bought the property and is wanting to tear down the house.
He's the original owner.
So he's the same person who's been a part of this neighborhood, albeit like in a satellite capacity for years. There's no way to talk to him and say, well, we weren't told. Like, there's nobody in the neighborhood who knows him. He's Robert, who's that guy from Magnum that he worked for, the Robin Masters figure? He's just always a voice on his speakerphone.
So it's interesting that I've lived on Glasgow Street for 20 years.
Right.
Raised my family there, my husband and I, and he did not know who I was.
Really?
When we met him at the Committee of Adjustments meeting, he introduced himself.
Do you believe that when I saw him at the Committee of Adjustment, I believe it was the first time I'd seen him in 15 years.
Okay.
So...
Did he remember you? Because you are right next door.
Oh, he remembers me.
Okay.
He remembers me because there were some issues.
Okay.
When early
As you were,
on.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, there were some issues early on. And so, yes, he remembers me. But...
he hasn't demonstrated a huge willingness to talk about these things with us.
No.
Yeah. Or to be a member in the community at this point.
Right. Right.
He hasn't really represented himself in our community.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No. There's really no history of interaction with the street in any way. He's been a landlord from afar, renting out and, you know, doing maintenance on his house.
But we have, as part of the application to appeal the OMB, there is a section that they ask if you would be open to mediation.
Right.
And so we ticked that box and said yes, we would be open to talking.
Yeah, we are quite open to. Mm-hmm. I don't think we're not hard nosed at all. We're looking for what's best for the street.
Yeah. Right.
We're also, you know, I've said this before, and we've said it in some of our press releases. We're stewards of these properties.
Right.
We pass through in history. Someone else will live in them one day, and we need to look to the future of what the street will be like. We're already very pressed on our street in terms of density. We have parking issues as it is now, because mm-hmm. we do have intensification on our street. If we have a triplex, what amounts to a triplex going next door? You know, if it gets rented to people who decide to fill it up full of students, or, you know, and again, we're not against that, but that kind of uncontrolled situation, you know, it's going to cause a lot of problems for people who one day will own our home, right?
Right.
And so we do want to think about that long term. You know, what happens 20, 30 years from now? There's never going to be a family living there ever again, and there never will be the opportunity for a family to live there again. And if the owner, and this was one of our issues too, if the owner of the building really, really wants a duplex or a triplex, then we'd encourage him to seek rezoning. Because rezoning has processes and checks and balances in place to make sure that it's appropriate, that the property can handle it, that all of the various regulatory things are being observed.
Perhaps more notice for the neighborhood, too.
Yeah, and more notice, a much wider radius, there is much more statutory regulation around notification. And that's, you know, to some extent, that is one of our other concerns, not specifically with 202, but in wider wealth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That the accessory apartment legislation is being used as a de facto way around rezoning.
Right.
You put in a duplex, what amounts to a duplex or a triplex in an R1B zoned area without having to go through those regulatory hoops. And that is a problem.
And also without some of those regulatory hoops, by the way, have to do with rendering the property safe.
Right.
You know, to be a multi-unit dwelling.
Yes.
You know, in terms of fire code. So one would hate to see a multi-unit dwelling emerge there, you know, that's a fire hazard, for instance, you know?
Yeah.
So it's a fairness question, it's a procedural question, but it's also potentially a safety issue.
Planning needs to be appropriate. It needs to go through proper processes. And we have heard tell from other people that, oh yeah, some amazing things happened on my street, and right. on my street. And so I think that the city would be advised to be very cautious about this kind of development and make sure it's being done properly.
So to bring this all together, you're going to the OMB. You are not necessarily against demolishing the house. You are not necessarily against having a duplex situation there. You are not necessarily against, you know, any kind of renovation or demolishment or in particular. What is your ideal resolution to this?
Well, I would say one, and in a way it's already begun, and that's that our hope would be to promote some discussion about these important things that, you know, that are going on, I think to some extent without being noticed. You know, there are real problems in the procedures by which these things are taking place. And so I think already we've brought a little bit of that to public notice. So that's already, you know, one goal is beginning to be met.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I would say that.
And in our case, in the specific house on our street, if I had the opportunity to negotiate, I would like to see a single family home with an accessory apartment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A proper single family home that a family with three kids could live in and rent out an accessory apartment, nanny, granny flat, sure. which again is the point of the accessory apartment
lesson. And which conforms to the bylaw. Because mm-hmm. why not? You know, you're starting from scratch. After
yes.
all, it would be relatively
yeah,
easy.
Yeah, in this situation, you're building from scratch.
It's a new build, right? Yeah. So one of the reasons, he had three variances in front of the Committee of Adjustments. Two were on the garage. One was the location of the garage on the property line, and one was the height of the garage. Both were denied because the Committee of Adjustment members said, if you're building something new, why would you build it on the property line?
Right.
Right? And so we're saying, if you're building something new, right, it's not like you're trying to shoehorn an existing building with an accessory apartment. And the walls are already built, and you're trying to make it work, right? This is a brand new build.
Mm-hmm.
So control through design what you're building.
Yeah, and if the bylaw says 80 square meters, then build it to 80 square meters. Why do you need to vary from that? You have the option to stay within the bylaw.
Yeah.
Why not?
So what's next for you guys? You're waiting to hear about your OMB date, but what kind of things are you going to be doing in the meantime?
Well, we're going to be doing some fundraising.
We're going to do some fundraising,
so
yes.
We're in the process of putting together our web page.
Yes. Yeah, so we'll have a website, probably do some crowdfunding. We do have plans afoot for a community-wide garage sale to help raise funds as well for our appeal.
We're creating a video to be embedded in our fundraising page on our web page to help bring awareness to the situation and hopefully help us raise some funds to help support our push to the OMB.
Yes. Yeah. And hopefully too, we'll also use our website as an opportunity to talk about some of these things like demolition, like accessory apartment legislation, just to try and educate and give people an opportunity to learn from our experience what they should know about this kind of legislation, which the things that can happen in the neighborhood, just so they're aware.
I was going to mention that, you know, there might be people listening to this and thinking to themselves, I wonder what might be going on in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
And so if there's like maybe piece of advice you give people, like in terms of things you've learned, things that you might know now that you wish you knew back in November, that perhaps, if only.
If only.
Well, one thing I would say is, so I'm newly back in Guelph,
mm-hmm.
and also newly back in Canada. I've lived in Switzerland for years.
Mm-hmm.
But so all of this is really a new experience, a real learning experience. But one of the things that one big part of that learning experience is that I realized, wow, it's actually really, it's wonderfully accessible. It's easy to get involved, actually, in municipal, and I call it municipal politics at this level. Our councillors are very willing to speak with us. It's very informative and very easy to get to the public meetings.
Even accessing the media.
Accessing the media.
Tribune's been very supportive and hearing us out.
The published materials are accessible. They're hard to read. You know, it's not super user friendly. Like,
yeah,
the legalese. But none. You can really get involved, and that's a nice feeling. You know, even if it's a difficult situation.
I would say the most challenging aspect to date has been figuring out the process of the Committee of Adjustments. So it was really hard to access that kind of information and how the process would work in the time frame that we were given to work in.
Right.
So I think we could have been more productive at the meeting, and I think we could have had a stronger statement if we had understood the process more clearly.
And so. If we'd had more opportunity, if there had been more notification about this process, then we probably would have been already on it, even before the letters came to us from the Committee of Adjustments.
And perhaps some kind of user manual.
Other municipalities have a much friendlier website than Guelph does.
Yeah.
More informative, clearer.
Yes.
Right. So even just to find out where the Committee of Adjustments has approved accessory apartments and for what reasons, or denied them for what reasons, it's a lot of data mining.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a lot of data mining.
Speaking from my own experience and looking for information, there needs to be a Google for the City Hall website, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's very difficult.
Put in, like, I want Committee of Adjustment minutes, and there you go.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's been challenging.
That's right.
Yeah, that has been challenging. Yeah. So.
Well, you guys are wearing the challenge well, I have to say.
Thank you.
Done a lot in a couple of months.
But
I appreciate you guys taking the time to talk to me. So Dan, Mary, and Lauren, thank you for doing this podcast today.
Thank you very much for your interest.
That was Laura, Mary, and Daniel. They are members of the Neighbors of Glasgow Street North Community Action Group. They do not presently have a website, but as you heard, they do have plans to build one, launch fundraising efforts. We will keep in touch with them over the coming weeks and months to see how they're doing and follow their progress as they head to the OMB hearing, though. And that's it for this week's episode of the Guelph Politicast. The theme music for Guelph Politicast is provided by the Crazy Pills and their song Break It Down, which you can find on the Free Music Archive. The host for the Guelph Politicast is Podbean. Go to guelphpoliticast.podbean.com to listen to past episodes, and while you're there, you can also listen to Open Sources Guelph. If you've missed last Thursday's episode on CFRU, you can download it via the Politicast channel on Podbean. And if I can add, stay tuned to Open Sources Guelph, because we've been on a roll lately with some of the interviews we've been doing. Thursday's show featured a discussion with MPP Liz Sandals. We also recently had Dan Gibson on the show, and coming up in the next couple of weeks, we will have Andy Van Helleman, Mike Schreiner, and Lloyd Longfield. Go to opensourcesguelph.com to get more of those details. As for me, you can stay in touch with me via email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. You can get to me through Twitter at Adam A. Donaldson. You can also go to the Guelph Politico Facebook page at facebook.com/PoliticoGuelph. And of course, I invite you to donate to the Guelph Politico Patreon at patreon.com/GuelphPolitico. If you like locally sourced independent media in the city of Guelph, please consider donating, and thank you to everyone who has donated so far. For all the latest local political news, check out Guelph Politico anytime at guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca. And you can also look at that blog for another future episode of the Guelph Politicast for you shortly. And until that next episode, we'll see you next time.